the show today, we're talking all things investment with the fabulous Nefe from Opus Partners. Welcome to Property Matters. Welcome along to another Monday, and if you're listening live in Auckland, what a beautiful summer's day you had today to drive home on. If you, of course, have downloaded our podcast from one of our many podcast sites, I can't guarantee you what the weather is like today, but thanks for tuning in and listening to us. Now, absolutely delighted this week to focus on all things investment, which I know you all love listening to, and delighted to have Nefe here, hope I've said that right, from Opus Partners. Welcome along, great to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Stephen.
It's fantastic to have you here. And look, there's an accent in there, so before we sort of talk career and things, where are you from? Where have you hailed from?
Yes, so originally I'm from the Isle of Man, which is a tiny little channel island in the British Isles.
Oh, nice. And when did you make the move to New Zealand? What brought you down here?
So I moved to New Zealand about 15 years ago when I turned 15.
Wow. Yes. So this is home.
It is. It's home. I'm here to stay.
Have you been back lately?
I did actually. Last year for Christmas, I went to see my dad.
Okay.
Yeah, I try and go back every maybe 2-3 years.
Nice. Yeah. What's the property and investment space like there compared to here?
Interestingly, the population growth in the Isle of Man hasn't really moved too much. There's about 80,000 people that live on the Isle of Man.
Wow.
So a lot of young people actually leave to the UK, where all the jobs and the universities are. And actually, it's quite an older generation in the Isle of Man. So, I mean, it's probably not very great, to be honest.
It's okay. Well, we'll focus now on New Zealand, since we brought you here. So, look, tell us a little bit more about your career journey and you know, what led up to you being a financial advisor?
Oh, yes. So, straight out of university, I started like a really small boutique cleaning business.
Okay.
Yeah, just as a way to just kind of, I wanted to learn how to start a business. So I thought cleaning, you don't have to be the only person, you just have to be good at it. So it was quite cool what I did. I tried to really focus on really high quality cleaning products. And I also offered a housekeeping service. So not only would I do your normal cleaning all the areas, I would do make the beds and do everyone's laundry as well. Oh, so, nice. And I did all the houses around like Ponsonby and Grey Lynn and Mount Albert. And that grew and grew and grew to a point where I was doing it 7 days a week with a wait list. And I had no idea what I was doing because I was 22. So I couldn't wait. I couldn't figure out how to scale it or anything. And thankfully, at that time, I was learning more about investing and kind of wanted to move away from it. Then COVID hit and basically wiped the business out, which was, again, I was a bit relieved about. And I was like, okay, well, I want to actually get into the financial services industry now that I'm starting to learn more, starting my level 5, which is the qualification you need to be a financial advisor. And I applied for a role as a practice manager at Enable Me, which is a financial advice provider in New Zealand that really specializes in tackling debt, tackling mortgages, and budgeting. So I started off as a practice manager, was in that role for a wee while I was finishing off my qualifications, and then I moved into the mortgage space within that company and started off as a junior loan writer. And I did that for a wee short stint, which was awesome, because as a young'un, wanting to learn more about the industry and was new to it was a great way for me to get a peek behind the curtain and understand how banks get how banks come to a yes, essentially.
Yeah.
So it was a great way for me to learn how mortgage structuring works, how applications work, and really get to see all these different types of people getting a yes from the bank and what banks, why banks say no and things. And during that time, the CCC was introduced and stuff, so it was cool. And then I was like, okay, I think I've got a good handle on this. What I'm going to do now is I want to learn about investing. So then I got a job at Fisher Funds, which is huge company in New Zealand that specializes in KiwiSaver and managed funds. They've been around for 26 years. And I started off there as a KiwiSaver and managed funds specialist and moved my way up to a senior client advisor. And here I am. Now I work at Opus Partners as a property advisor.
That's a great journey. What, you know, I go right back to your cleaning days. Mm. But what a cool start to a career to go, I'm actually going to start self-employed, do the hard yards? You're obviously good at it if you ended up doing it 7 days a week with a waiting list. What sort of things did you take from those early days that you're still probably doing now? Ooh. Was there any sort of skill or mindset or just determination?
I'd probably say determination. I think cleaning 2 to 3 houses a day takes a bit of grit because it's quite exhausting. Working in office is a lot less tedious on the body now. But what's quite cool about business, it teaches you how to hustle and find work.
Yeah.
And being comfortable with having really uncomfortable conversations, like quoting people or talking about money or door knocking and being like, hey, are you looking for a cleaner?
Yeah.
So it built my confidence a lot.
And I bet you have the cleanest house on the street today.
I wouldn't say the cleanest, but I'd say it's tidy.
So what made you so sort of passionate and interested in investments? Was it your sort of journey through Enable Me, the bank, the Fisher Funds, etc.? Or was there something else that just sort of really sparked that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So I didn't grow up in a financially literate household, so our family always really struggled with money, and we had I remember watching my parents grow up, and they just really had a unhealthy relationship with money and things like that, and they were really unhappy. So I grew up kind of not wanting to turn out like that, effectively. And when I met my now husband, he came from a much more comfortable background than I did, and it was the first time really meeting people that were wealthier and really wanting to be curious and kind of go, well, how are people making money? How are people doing this? And because my mindset at the time was very, rich people are evil, or they're selfish, or, you know, we should be forcing them to give away all their wealth. And investing was just, it was just for the rich people with money. And it was something that was is accessible to people like me. So actually meeting my husband's parents, I was really inspired to kind of go, wow, you can really fill your cup and then you can actually help more people, because they're probably some of the most generous people I know. So it was actually what helped me change my mindset, which is what inspired me to want to get into investing, to figure out how people bloody make money.
But it's interesting that you've drawn on sort of the struggles that your parents had to make you motivated, I guess, to have that different outcome. What's been, you know, their thoughts? You mentioned going back and seeing your dad. What's his thoughts on your journey now?
Yeah, he's in a lot different situation now, just because time gets on, but my parents split when I was young, but my biological father that lives back in the Isle of Man, I would say he's proud of me.
Nice.
Yeah, I think so.
That's cool. Yeah. That's cool. Now, you owned 3 properties before you were 30. Was that in Auckland?
So 2 are in Auckland, 1 is in Christchurch.
Wow. Well, what do you think was your key to success to be able to get 3 before 30?
I have it's a gift and a curse, Stephen. I am a bit unrelenting. When I've got a goal in mind, I can't think of anything else, and I'm pretty determined to just do whatever it takes to achieve it. And thankfully, my husband is very supportive. And
I was just about to say, does your husband need a beer after the show?
He's the best.
Okay.
He puts up with me just not being able to focus. Like, I'll just do whatever it takes, but it means I'll live off noodles for 2 years. I'll bloody do it.
To get it done. Brilliant. Did you sort of have leverage off one to get the next,
Correct. Yeah. So there were some things I did to make that happen faster. So the first one we bought, it was during COVID, and we used a 10% deposit, and we were first home buyers, so we used KiwiSaver and some savings. And when COVID hit, everyone panicked, and there was a little moment there where everything was cheap, really, for a minute there. So we bought then, and it was a fixed price turnkey contract, so it was a brand new build, and it took 6 months for that property to be built. And in that 6 months, the property housing market boomed, so we gained a significant amount of equity during that time. Then over the course of a year after that, we really worked to rapidly pay down that mortgage as well. So by the end of that year, we had enough equity to leverage and buy our first investment property after that.
Well done.
Yeah.
You still got the 3?
Still got them.
Brilliant. So talking now about your day job, and take your time on this, like, talk a little bit about how you're helping people today on their investment journey.
Oh, yes. So my job is where I get to help people in New Zealand build their wealth through investing in property. And specifically, I specialize in new build investments. So day to day, I get to talk to people from all walks of life, rich, poor, in the middle. And I get to talk about really three core things in the first instance, which is what's the goal, what's the gap, what's the plan. So I spend quite a bit of time really trying to get to know the client, really trying to figure out, what are you trying to achieve? Why are we trying to invest? Because you're obviously here because you want something to change. And so I'll talk to them about, okay, well, when do you want to retire? What does that retirement lifestyle look like? And I'll figure out with them, okay, well, if you want to go on holiday every single year and you want to be mortgage free on your own home and you want to be able to go out for dinner every single week, I figure out, okay, how much is that lifestyle going to cost you on an annual basis after tax and inflation adjusted? Then I'll move on to the next stage with them, which is the gap, which is usually the more uncomfortable part of the meeting. That is where we do a bit of a stock take on their financial position, and we go, okay, what are you on track to achieve based on the assets you've already accumulated so far? So if you've got some sharesies, if you've got some keys, if you've already got property, whatever that is, we'll figure out what the client's on track to achieve versus where do they want to be, and if there's a difference there, and we figure out what the gap is. And then I'll look at the numbers, we'll look at the data, and I'll create a tailored plan to that person to say, okay, if you want to achieve this, this is what, if you wanted to invest in property as your vehicle to get you there, this is what theoretically you're going to need to do to get you there. And I'll try and make that as robust as possible by using spreadsheets that can forecast how many properties you can purchase in a given time frame, and I'll allow for things like capital growth and inflation and things like that. So it's a really robust plan, and if we need to tweak it, if I can't quite close, we might need to adjust the goals a little bit, whether we need to just lower that income goal a bit or extend, add a few more years onto the goal to make it more achievable. But by the end of my first meeting with people, they're going to know what they want to achieve, where they want to be, and then a plan to get there.
Do you ever have to have that tough conversation of actually there just isn't enough to play with, or do you then go, it's now about focusing on what we can do to get the things to have that money to invest?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't transparent with people and saying, okay, that the goal that you have isn't actually, based on today's situation, isn't actually achievable. So what can we do in the time that we have and in the time frame that you have to invest? And okay, maybe we don't try and aim for $100,000 per year. Let's aim for $75,000 per year. And perhaps it might not be a passive income forever and ever and ever. It might be, okay, well, why don't we see if we can get you X amount of money to give you $75,000 a year from the age of 65 through to 90. So there's things we can do and levers we can pull to say, okay, what can we do? And do we need to tweak it and adjust? And yeah.
Brilliant. And how do people pay for your time? Like, do you literally, is it a fee to be involved, or are you earning off where they may invest? Like, how does that work for the client?
Yeah, correct. So we are a free service forever and always to clients, to investors. How OPEZ makes its money is if you decided to purchase a property that we recommend, we get paid from the developer.
Gotcha. And is it ever too late to start investing? If someone's listening to this and retirement's looming, is it too late?
It really depends on the client. So for an example, most of the time, if you are already, say, 68 years old and we haven't got any other investment behind us, no other savings, and you're solely relying on the NZ Super, then yeah, I'd probably say no, I don't think it's wise for you to take on 100% of debt on a property, because it's not going to give you the income that you're after, because that'll probably be a negatively geared property. So there are going to be some scenarios where investing in property is not going to be the right avenue for a client. In saying that, there are plenty of people I know that have no intentions of retiring and they want to work till the age of 70. So I would say case by case, but ideally you want to get in as young as possible so you've got more time in the market. It's not common for people the older they get to invest property, because you've just got a shorter time frame.
Is it just properties that you focus on? And I guess I can split that question, you personally and OPEZ Partners. Is it just property, or are there other investment portfolios that you're looking at?
Ooh, okay. So with OPEZ Partners, we are solely focused on property, specifically new builds. So I can't give you advice on KiwiSaver or managed funds anymore, because that's not something that OPEZ can talk about. However, personally, I'm a huge advocate for a diversified portfolio. So I invest in property and I invest in shares / index funds as well. And I like having some cash on me too. So yes. So the answer is no, I personally don't solely focus on property, but the company I work for.
No, that's cool. That's cool. And it's good to hear that, you know, your definition between the two. Is there something in your personal world that you've gone, that's given me the best return?
Ooh, well, this is going to sound biased because I am a property investor and I work for a property investment company, but I do find that my property has had a better return than my shares. Now, in saying that, shares historically do tend to have a high capital growth, especially if you invest in an aggressive portfolio where you could see anywhere between a 6 to a 10% return, for an example, whereas property you tend to see 5 to 6%. However, the beauty of property is you've got leverage and it's that compounding return. So because I've got higher asset value properties and they're getting a 5% return, that has shown me a higher return compared to my shares, where I've had to start from a $0 balance and I've dollar cost averaged my way in despite seeing a higher return.
Do you think someone listening who wants to sort of just dabble in that shares first, something like the Sharesies app is a good way of going in?
Yeah, I think it's fabulous.
That's very clever.
I mean, not personalised financial advice, but I love Sharesies. I think it's a great way, especially if property is not something that's accessible to you right now. I think it's an awesome way to practice. And it's not going to cost you, you know, $500 a week. You can start with, if you can afford a cup of coffee, you can afford to invest.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I've gone down that rabbit hole. It's quite fascinating. How do you think we can improve financial literacy as a country? Like, are we doing enough to teach our next generation?
Ooh, okay. So previously, no. I don't think we were doing enough. However, I know recently, and I think it's all over the media now, is that it has been introduced, financial literacy, as a curriculum in schools from 2026, and then it's mandatory for 2027, which I think is amazing, because it's not something that any of us had prior to that. And I think that is a wonderful way. So I would love to see how that goes for the next generation.
Yeah, because you know, certainly growing up, for me, it was only ever about saving. So you had your little cash in the elephant that you saved your coins in, or you went to the bank or the post office, yes, I'm that old, that you took things in, and it was just focused on saving. And then if you did accounting at high school, you may have learned a little bit more. But, you know, it'd be so cool to teach young teenagers of, you know, what are the costs of going flatting, buying your first home.
Yeah.
You know, we've had guests on the show that say, you know, don't buy your first home emotionally for yourself. Buy that first home as an investment property.
Yes.
And get that building. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'd love to see what the curriculum is and what those internal assessments are, and if there are any exams, just to see what they're actually learning. You know, is it to demonstrate how to run a budget, or is it being able to do a presentation explaining what a managed fund is? Or I'd love to know what they're actually going to be teaching.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
You mentioned that your company focuses mainly on new builds.
Correct.
Yeah. Why is that?
For a plethora of reasons, really. First of all, we're not experts at building or renovating and things like that.
Right.
At Opez, we really like the fact that with new builds, that we can, with this data to back it, they're exempt from DTIs, which is quite handy. So technically, there's a potential there we can actually buy more properties thanks to with the DTI restrictions. Does anyone know what the DTI restrictions are?
Fill them in.
Ah, so DTI restrictions is basically something that the bank will test you on to stop you from purchasing too many properties and over leveraging yourself. So effectively, it's for every dollar of income that you have, you can get $7 worth of investment debt. Now, with new builds, they're actually exempt from that rule, which is quite handy for some people, because it means that most people who've got a wealth gap, they're probably going to need to buy more properties or multiple properties in their lifetime to close that wealth gap. So being exempt from this barrier to entry, it means that you're more likely to be able to buy more properties, which means you're more likely to be able to close that wealth gap. So we quite like new builds for that reason, but also LVR, so your loan to value ratio, so how much equity you've got in your property. With new builds, you only need a 10 to 20% deposit, whereas with existing builds, they tend to require a higher deposit, so 30%. So it's easier again to buy a new build. which is why we like them. And also they're lower maintenance, so it's great if we're not got the skill set to renovate. Yeah. And if we want to diversify our portfolio geographically, you know, rather than having all your properties concentrated to one area, without sounding too biased, I know, because I'm not leaning too much towards existing. It's a very valid strategy, but just for this sake, we do like the fact that it means that you can diversify your portfolio and not have to worry too much about maintenance, because they're brand new.
Are your properties just in Auckland and main centres, or do you look all over the country? Someone's listening to us in the South Island, for example.
So it's based on data. So right now, we're really big fans of Christchurch and Auckland because they're two of the largest cities in the country. We tend to see consistent population growth in those areas and consistent capital growth, and right now they're undervalued. So we like areas that are undervalued, particularly in cities as well.
So you spend a lot of time looking at that data?
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah, cool.
Okay, so thinking now about KiwiSaver and our retirement, do you think that we are prepared enough for our retirement? And I spotted some thoughts you had on your bio and website around this. So where do you think we're at as a country?
So as someone that's seen thousands of KiwiSaver balances, I'm confident in saying that no, we are not on track for retirement. KiwiSaver is not enough. I think I read something the other day recently that the average KiwiSaver balance for somebody in their 60s is about $65,000, which if your retirement doesn't start and end at 65, it starts at 65, then some of us are living to 95.
Yeah.
So no way do I think it's enough.
Yeah.
So I think we do need to kind of think, okay, what can we do to build our wealth more?
So what are your top tips? I mean, is it about getting into a more aggressive KiwiSaver, changing your risk up, or is it putting more in is the key?
I would say all of the above.
Yeah.
I think more time in the market, the better. So the earlier you can, the better. If we can increase our contributions, if we encourage employers to increase the contributions, making sure you're speaking to a financial advisor to make sure you're in the correct portfolio, so your risk tolerance, as you mentioned, because so many people, they might just get automatically signed up when they start a job and they just stay in a default fund, and they're missing out on literally thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars over the course of their career.
Do you think there should be a mix, so you should have sort of a certain amount of your, say, 50% in a safer, a bit more mild, and 50% in a bit more aggressive, or do you just go for it, or does it depend on the risk tolerance of the person?
Completely depends on the risk tolerance of the person. Yeah, for someone like me, I would not do well in just half my money in cash. I'm a very aggressive investor personally. If it's up to me, my money would be in all equities until I reach retirement. But I'm really comfortable with volatility. I'm okay with it. I'm 30 years old. I've got another 35 years until I retire. I am A-okay with volatility. However, in saying that, somebody who is close to retirement, perhaps, and they've got more assets behind them, and they're going to need that money, and they might withdraw within the next 3 years, then they probably don't want all their money in equities. They want to move that money to something that's a little bit more stable, like cash and term deposits.
Are you a supporter of KiwiSaver being used for the first time buy?
Yeah, I am. Yeah. I mean, I would never have purchased my first time without KiwiSaver.
Yeah, interesting. And again, back to that financial literacy, you wonder, are they teaching more about KiwiSaver? You know, if you're 18 and starting your first job and you sign up with KiwiSaver, you're instantly going to be ahead of someone who hasn't started, like many of us, till sort of in their
30s.
Shezzy's now have put out a KiwiSaver plan, which is interesting. So I'll be curious to see where that goes. They kind of did a little bit of delving, but it's a bit early yet to get any data because they haven't been running long enough. But that's investing all your KiwiSaver through shares.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool that Shezzy's are introducing their own KiwiSaver scheme, because it does give people more control over what they invest in, especially if you don't want your... Because when you invest with an active manager like a Fisher Funds or a Milford, and this is, again, not to say it's a bad thing, but they might invest in companies that you don't want to support, and you don't have a choice in that. You just have a choice of what type of portfolio you invest in. So it gives you more control. In saying that, the chances of you being an expert picking the right stocks, I think, can be a little bit risky. So I think, you know, again, talking to a financial advisor that can give you some guidance, perhaps, it would be a good idea. So if you know what you're doing and you're comfortable all power to you. I think it's quite cool. Lower fees. I think it's great.
Yeah. You're saying I shouldn't be going on the Sharesies app and buying shares based on the crazier name that I read, the funniest company names.
Just all on Bitcoin.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So let's focus on first-time investors. What sort of tips and tricks do you have for them to get on the ladder?
Oh, well, I can tell you exactly what I did when I wanted to get on the ladder. I spoke to a mortgage advisor and I said, I've got no bloody idea what I'm doing. What can I do to get in a position to make me ready to get a yes from the bank? Yeah. And I had this wonderful mortgage advisor just said, hey, you know, you need your income to be at $50,000. And my husband's needs to be at $70,000. And you need to have at least a 10% deposit. So that can be made up of your KiwiSaver. And they'll give you some guidance on, okay, what's required. And then you just reverse engineer it and go, okay, well, that means I'm going to need to save $300 a week for the next 18 months. And I would say probably for any first-time buyers out there or investors, the trap that I tend to see a lot of first-time buyers get into is their first home has to be their forever home. And that is something that will just keep you on the sidelines for ages. Because don't get me wrong, everybody wants a standalone home, three-bed with a garage and a garden. But in reality, it's your first home. Just get on. And I would look at properties that would make, you know, from an investment standpoint, in good areas that can go up in value. And I would just focus on what's going to get you on the ladder and what's going to help give you that growth. Because chances are the house you live in today is not going to be the house you're going to want to live in 15 years. You're probably going to lift and shift regardless. So that would be my advice.
And once you've got that property, how do we then use it to leverage getting the next one?
Oh, okay. So I can tell you what we did. We bought in a major city, was our first home, which you have to with KiwiSaver. You have to live in it for 6 months in an area where houses tend to be cheaper. So they tend to be slightly lower socioeconomic areas. But I mean, I live in Kelston, which is really close to Avondale and New Lynn. It's absolutely fine. It's a great suburb, close to the CBD. And I tend to find there's quite a large rental population out there. So if I did decide to turn it into a rental property, I could. But what my husband and I did is we really focused on paying down that mortgage really quickly. Now, because I'm a new build property investor, I'm really relying on two things, and that is capital growth and my ability to pay down debt to increase my equity position so I can leverage again, unless I use a cash deposit on another property. However, if you're an active investor, then you've actually got some more tools that you could use. You could use the BRRRR strategy, which adding a bedroom, increasing your rental income. Take that rental income, that'll improve your servicing on a bank calculator, and you could use that to pay down some of the debt, improve your equity, and you could leverage and buy again. Or you can renovate the home, lift the value, that'll give you an equity lift, and then you can leverage and rinse and repeat. Depends what strategy you go down. For new builds, you really just got to focus on paying down that debt. So I use the revolving credit facility to do that. So me and my husband will sit down and go, okay, how much do you think we could pay off this year? And we might say, oh, maybe we could do an extra $5,000. And so we'll open our little revolving credit facility. We'll talk to the bank and say, hey, can you break off a little portion of our main loan, put it into the revolving credit facility so it's now overdrawn by $5,000? And then we will spend the year really working towards getting that paid off.
Clever.
Yeah, and we just rinse and repeat every single year.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay. Back at the start of the interview, you know, we talked a little bit about your own journey. So what's next for you, both, I guess, from the investment side and career side? Where are you heading next?
Oh, okay. So
crystal ball time. Come on.
Crystal ball time. I would say, well, we've got to pay down some debts, David.
Yeah.
So it'll just be knuckling down at work and being the best advisor I can be, paying down some of my mortgages. And because I've now got overexposure to property, I do need to start building up my shares again, so bounce that out a little bit more.
Nice. And career-wise, where would you like to be if I interviewed you in 5 years' time, you know?
So I definitely see myself continuing to be a financial advisor. I've definitely found my ikigai.
Nice.
However, I do like the idea of also having a business. So not necessarily a big empire, but I do quite like the idea of owning like a little dairy or little hair salon or just something.
On the side of doing your financial investment.
Yeah. Why not?
Well, you were quite good at cleaning back in the day, and now you've learned enough to set that cleaning franchise up.
Maybe.
Okay. How do you measure success in your life?
How do I measure success in my life? This is a tough one, Stephen. I'd probably say just the fact that I'm trying.
Mm.
I'm quite okay with if I failed at building the wealth and achieving my financial goals, at least I can say, you know what, I really gave it a go.
Yeah.
I really tried and I learned something. So I would say that's how I measure success. It's just I'm trying.
Nice. Is it that diversity too, by having some in property, some in shares, then also you're spreading that risk for success?
Yeah, I think so. And I like shares for the fact that it's just a little more liquid than property.
Yeah,
just think it's,
KiwiSaver, we can only have one provider, can't we? We can't have like X amount with one and X to try out.
Correct.
Different. Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably one of the benefits of having something like Sharesies, where you can kind of pick some different portfolios and things. And I think it's Invest Now, or is that something else? But yeah, it's a shame, but you can always say, for an example, if your KiwiSaver's with Milford, then you could have a managed fund with Fisher Funds,
right,
so you could do
spread
it that way.
Nice. So your career as a financial advisor, you know, you mentioned at the start having to do your level 5, like what's involved for you from a qualification point of view, and also what do you do to keep upskilling?
Yeah, so to be a financial advisor, you need your level 5 in financial services, and then you would specialize in a particular field. So it's usually broken up into 3 main parts, which is your insurances, residential property lending, or investing. So if it's investing, you're generally going to be a financial advisor that specializes in shares, KiwiSaver, managed funds, property. If it's residential property lending, chances are you probably want to be a loan writer or a mortgage advisor one day. And then insurances, insurances.
Mm.
So when I did my level 5 in financial services, I did my residential property lending paper and I did my investments strand as well.
Okay. If you're giving advice to somebody who's, thinking about starting all this out, etc., apart from obviously talking to professionals like yourself, who else do you think should be in their professional toolkit that they get advice from? Are we talking like lawyers? And
who should we be
making sure we've got in our toolbox before we sign our life away?
Yeah, you need your investment panel. So
that's a nice way of saying it.
You always want to get a good accountant. They're worth the weight in gold. Good property manager. Having a good property manager that's really good. A good solicitor that's an expert in the field that you're specializing in, whether that's property or something else, and a good financial advisor. And I always think it's really good as well is just be part of a community that's doing the same thing as you. I think a lot of people get really easily talked out of investing at the family barbecue or talking to the plumber. And so actually being in a community where you can actually share your stories and be comfortable talking about money and your experiences is a great learning platform as well.
And there's some good online groups, investor groups in Facebook, etc., where people do just go, hey, this has just happened, is this right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, again, you got to filter the answers.
Yeah.
And AI is not necessarily correct, but having those networks, I agree with you. So what else does OPES Partners do?
So we are, think of this as like a one-stop shop for new build property investing. So we have an end-to-end service. So not only do you have a team of financial advisors that you can work with, but then we also, if you go, do you know what, OPES is the right fit for us, but we don't want to have to keep going to this professional, we do have that service where you can go, hey, we've got a team of mortgage advisors as well that can help. We also have a property accountants team. We also have a property management team, which means that if you're new to this or you don't want to be left in the dark and you just want that little bit more hand-holding, then we can walk through that entire process all the way to settlement and property management. And then we rinse and repeat every single year, and it's awesome.
So if you look back on your career journey so far, and you've got a lifetime ahead of you, but what do you think was some of the biggest challenges in your career?
Some of the biggest challenges in my career?
That you had to overcome?
Probably my age.
Yeah.
I would say. I think it's really, because I'm so young, I think it's really difficult probably for some people to want to trust the advice that I'm giving them, because they're going to say, well, bloody hell, what do you know?
Yeah. Is that where you tell your story? I've got three houses by the time I was 30. Do you tell that story as part of your pitch?
Yeah, a little bit. I think, maybe. I guess it depends on the person. But yeah, I think probably just my age, you know, I've learned a lot in a very short period of time. So it's just making sure that people trust me and that I am qualified and I do know what I'm talking about. And I've been trained extensively. We've got a wonderful team, you know, compliance team at OPES, where they make sure that we're staying on top of all of our continuous professional development to make sure, so...
Mm-hmm. Personal highlight, if you look back and go, that was a defining moment in my career journey, which could have been your personal things that contributed to it.
Well, I've always wanted to work at OPES.
Okay.
Yeah, so when I was a cleaner and I was learning, I was trying to get financially literate whilst I was trying to run this business, I would listen to their podcast every day while I was cleaning, and along with loads of others, but I always knew I wanted to work at OPES at some point, and so that was really cool to be able to see that actually happen.
Nice.
And finally become a financial advisor here. For personally, though, as a personal achievement, I would say buying my first home. I think... I never thought I'd ever be able to buy my own home. It's really easy, I think, as someone who's young, to get wrapped up in all the echo chamber of what the media say about how it's too hard and, you know, we'll never be able to buy a house. So to be actually be able to achieve it was really cool. It told me that anything's possible.
If money or current debt wasn't the issue, so put that aside for a second, if you could have a future project or a future build or a future investment, what would you spend your money on? If someone said, right now, here's $1 million, what would you immediately go, I know what I'm going to spend that on?
Immediately, what would I going to spend that on? Oh, that's a good one.
Wouldn't that be cool now if that door opened in the studio and someone did that?
Oh, I'd love $1 million.
Just saying to everyone else here in the studio, if anyone's got $1 million, you know, Studio 3, just walk on in.
Yeah, feel free to find me online. You can give me a call. What would I do if I had $1 million today?
You had to invest it straight away.
If I had $1 million, I'd probably invest it either into property or the S&P 500, personally.
Okay.
I would, yeah.
Why the S&P 500?
Well, it's an index fund. It's low fees.
Yep.
No actively managed fund has ever outperformed it. And it's extremely diverse. It's 500 of the top performing companies in the US.
Uh-huh.
I love it.
Great.
Not personalised financial advice.
Not at all. Not writing it down. Yeah, great. That's cool. That's cool. If you could go back in time and sit your 16-year-old self down.
Yeah.
Knowing everything that you know now, what advice would you give 16-year-old Neffy?
I would say, what would I say? I would say start investing right now and you will thank me at 30.
Yeah.
I would say dollar cost average your way in and keep going and just start as soon as possible. I feel like every investor says that, if only I could start earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But starting with your own business too, just, I think, to set you up for a career of success, because that's hard work.
It was. I'm glad I'm not earning it now. But it was cool to be able to come up with a service, take it to market and generate money from it. That was cool. What I wasn't good at, as anyone would be at 20 years old, is to how to run a business that you don't know how to scale and you don't know how to handle all this interest coming in.
I'm just impressed that at 20 you knew how to do good cleaning.
Yeah, wow.
My daughters are listening. Hello. Come on, people. Where can people go to follow you, find out more information about OPES Partners, etc.?
Yes, absolutely. So all you have to do is you can Google OPES and your website will be the first thing that pops up, and then you'll be able to find me on the website. Otherwise, you can email me directly, neffy@opespartners.co.nz.
Fantastic. So we're winding down now to Christmas. Do you switch off and have a break, or is your head still ticking on investments and other people's investments?
I try to switch off, but I think I love my job a little bit too much. I will probably won't. I'll probably keep on top of everything and check in with everyone. But I like to spend some time with the family and things like that.
Brilliant. Do you check in on your investment properties around the country? Is that something you're regularly checking, or do you leave it to the experts?
Yeah, I don't. I'm the laziest investor, Stephen. My husband has even walked into our Christchurch one.
Brilliant.
Never seen it, just leaves it. Yeah, it's ticking along.
That's
property
great.
Managers sort it all. Yeah.
It's about relying on those professionals, though, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm too busy. We both got full-time jobs. We delegate the job.
Love it. Yeah. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting. We've learned a lot. This has been a great interview, and I hope our listeners have made some notes and go and check them all out. All the very best for Christmas, and we'd love to crystal ball in the future and see where things have got to.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
Thank you. Of course, you can download all of our podcasts from iHeartRadio, Apple and Samsung Podcast, or wherever you like to grab them. They're also up on YouTube. And we've got two more weeks before we wrap for the year, so we'll look forward to catching you next Monday. If you're driving home, travel safe. Have a great rest of your week. We'll catch you next week. We'll be right back.